You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 119 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I am delighted to be joined this evening by Bria. Welcome, Bria.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I am wonderful today. It was rainy all day today, but still wonderful.
I think it's actually the first time here it hasn't rained in about 2 months. So yeah, it's all good here. But no, thank you so much for joining me. And we are here to talk about your son's Hirschsprung's journey. So over to you. You can start wherever you please.
Okay. So, of course, throughout the pregnancy, we did not have any concerns because it's not something that you can see on the ultrasound. And this would be my second child. So I'm going into the hospital thinking, you know, okay, it's going to be just like the first one. Easy peasy. We're going to have the C-section, be there for about 5 days, and then we're going to come home, you know, and everything's going to be just like it was the last time. No. So we had the baby. We went, after I had the C-section, we were in the room. They kept saying, like, did he poop? Had he pooped yet? And I'm like, no. But I wasn't thinking nothing of it because, of course, I never heard of Hirschsprung's disease ever. So that wasn't on my mind. I'm just like, okay, well, you know, he hasn't pooped yet. You know, it's not a cause for concern. Until I think it was like the third day or the second day. The second day, the pediatrician came in, and which is also my other son's pediatrician as well. She came in and she was like, he still had him poop. And I was told her, and she was like, yeah. So she like took her finger and she like put it in his anus part. And she like basically made the poop come out, which was the meconium, the black poop. And she was like, I'm going to send you to, I think it was a surgeon. His name was Dr. Patel. I'll never forget Dr. Patel. And I was like, okay, I still wasn't concerned. I'm just like, okay, they're just going to just see if something's wrong. But I think my uncle was on his way to come and see us at the hospital. And right before he got there, the nurse was like, they're going to take your baby to the NICU. And I'm like, the NICU? They was like, yeah, the surgeon is going to come and talk to you more about it or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I could just remember, I immediately start bawling my eyes. I'm like, surgeon, NICU, that means we're going to be here a while. Like, this sounds pretty serious. And then my gynecologist, she is very, like, family-oriented. Like, when you think of a doctor you want, like, she's the doctor. So she came in and she seen me crying. She's like, what's wrong? And then she was like, oh my gosh. She's like, that sounds like Hirschsprung's or whatever. She's like, I remember a case like a long, long time ago where someone had it and it wasn't as many treatments as it is today. So it wasn't really much they can do for that baby way back then. She was like, but technology has changed. Medicine has changed. She was like, so if that's what it is, just hope it's not. Maybe, you know, the baby will be okay or whatever. So then the surgeon came in and he was telling me, he was like, I'm hoping that's not what it is. He was like, but is it possible that's what it is? I was just remember, I was not listening. I was distraught. Like, I was crying. I know he probably thought I was crazy because I was just crying. I just couldn't stop crying. They were like, you can go see your baby in the NICU. And I remember going in. This was my first time ever even being in a NICU for anybody. So when I went in there and I seen this little baby, my little baby, hooked up to all these machines. He has tubes coming out his nose. He only has a diaper on. He's laying in like this little bed. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. I'm in the NICU sitting at his bedside crying. I could not stop crying. But luckily the NICU was 24 hours. So you can go in there whenever you wanted to. And my whole hospital stay. Until they like discharged me, I was in there. And I would be in there all day. If you look for me, I was in that NICU outside of it. I stayed for anything. Anytime when they would come in there and have to work on him, they'd be like, "Do you want to step away?" No, I can't. Because I feel like he doesn't know he needs me, but he needs me right now. And I need to see this because I need to be able to know what's going on, what I need to do for later, or I just need to be involved. I'm a very hands-on person, so I needed to be in the room at all times. I don't care what they was doing, whether you were trying to stick him, poke him, I needed to be there. I had to see that for myself. So he was in the NICU. They gave him a Rapogo tube to like pull all the stuff from his stomach. They did I know a lot of people call them washouts, but I hear we call them irrigations. Well, I never heard of washout until like I started looking more on TikTok and stuff. But they did irrigation. He was pooping on his own then. They ended up giving him a PICC line because his IV, he kept pulling his IV out. So they had to do, I couldn't be in there for that. That's the only thing they didn't let me be in there for. But they gave him a PICC line, which was very tough because, you know, the PICC line has to go like through your heart. So they gave him a PICC line because they gave him an IV in his foot. The IV was in his hand. The IV was in his arm. The IV was in his head. And I think that one in the head was the scariest one because I don't know if it was positioned right or what, but I had came in from the bathroom or just eating because the nurse would see me sitting in there all day. So she'd be like, go get some food. Go use the restroom. Go take care of yourself. And I came back and that IV from his head, his whole face, that side swollen, eyes swollen shut. And I had to get the discharge nurse because I'm like, this doesn't look okay. That's why you don't need me to room because I'm going to say something. I cannot not say anything. So they end up, whoever that nurse was, they end up like telling her that wasn't okay. And a discharge nurse that came and fixed it. That's why he got the PICC line because that was crazy. But after that, they did his, I watched him do his, the biopsy to see if like the what is called with the blue light, I can't think right now, where they put the enema, the blue enema in him to see. And then they did the biopsy at the table where he clipped a little bit off. The doctor, the surgeon came in and he clipped a little bit off. So I got to see that. It didn't look like it was paying for anything. They did that and then they sent it and then it was confirmed that he did have Hirschsprung's. And so he was like, we can do two options. He was like, I'm like, wait a minute. So basically you're telling me we're going to be here for a while. And he was like, yeah. I'm like, so we're not going to be here. We're going to be here for Christmas. He was like, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, my God, crying again. Like, what do you mean? This is too much for me. So he was like, you got two options. And like I said, I'm hands-on. I'm a visual learner. So you can't just tell me. And I'm just like, I need to see it. So he gave me this paper. I still have the paper in a folder with all his stuff. I will never throw the paper away. On the front, he wrote down where he could have the ostomy bag. Or could, if I wanted him to get home sooner, let's do the ostomy bag. Or he's like, or we can go ahead and do the surgery, which is the laparoscopic pull through. And so I'm like, what do you think is the best option? He's like, I've done this surgery before. He was like, I don't think it's a lot of his intestine that's affected. He was like, I have very high hopes for the surgery. He's like, I think we should go ahead with the surgery. He's like, but it's totally up to you. He's like, or you can go get a second opinion. And I'm like, a second opinion? I can't even go get a second opinion because I still don't know really what is going on. So a second opinion is not going to help me right now. So I'm like, let's just do the surgery because if you're saying do the ostomy bag, I mean, you got to do the ostomy bag. That's the surgery. And then in a couple of months, you come back and do the surgery. That's another surgery. Let's just see if we can get this done this first time and see how it goes. So he did the surgery. We were in the NICU for 28, 29 days. He got out right before the new year started, like the day before the new year started. That's when he got out. So, yeah. And after the surgery, I just remember he was in like the recovery portion of it. Okay, so he was in the NICU for like 5 days. Then they did this stuff, and then 2 weeks later he had the surgery, and then they let him, his head recovery time is like a week, but they let him recover for 10 days. So before that 10 days, he was getting more ounces of milk, because they at first they were giving him only 8 mL, and that's nothing. That's feeding him absolutely nothing. They said they were giving him nutrients and stuff through the pink line, but it's like, you know, he's a baby. He's still looking for some milk or something. You know, he's hungry. Like, give him a little more. But once he had the surgery, he was taking the feeds down. Because at first, like, before he even went to the NICU, sorry to backtrack. I have to make sure I tell you everything. Before he went to the NICU, when he was also wasn't pooping, he was, when you would feed him the breast milk or a bottle, you can see when, and you, I don't even remember him burping, but I know that I would try to burp him for a long time, and then I would try to like lay him down, and it's like when he would be laying down, the milk was coming up, so he was like you have to hurry up and grab him, because he was like choking on the milk coming back up because he couldn't get everything down. But after the surgery, he was able to keep everything down. They stopped doing the irrigations because he was pooping on his own. But it's one day after the surgery, he's just screaming, crying in the NICU, just screaming, screaming, screaming. And he's like, what is going on? And they opened his diaper and he was bleeding from his anus. So one of the stitches had popped. Yes, it was the worst thing ever. So they had to fix that, which was, it wasn't really too bad to fix. They were dissolvable stitches. But I don't remember how they fixed it though. I'm not sure. But they fixed that. They gave him some medicine because he was crying and screaming really bad. And then after that, we got to go home. He was doing pretty well at home. He was pooping, normal baby kind of acting. But, you know, it was, you knew that if he was different, which was okay. And then we had to see the surgeon like 2 weeks later. And he taught me how to do the probes that keep the space open. So I had to learn that. We did those for probably like 2.5 months, 3 months, just so we could keep that surgery space open. And I did good with that. Like, when I tell you, I'm going to make sure I learn everything, I learned everything. And every time we would go to the doctor to check just that, he would be like, you're doing great, because it's not like you need to go down and start from another number. Or he's like, I can see that you're actually doing this a good amount of times a day, because you're going up. You're constantly going up. So we got to stop that. And we got to find a GI doctor. I had to switch. So I have another good GI doctor now for him. But yeah, we came home and now he is 3. And he's 3. But I don't know, you have any questions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that sounds, it's a funny one, Hirschsprungs, isn't it? Because there's so many people I talk to, like yourself, who is presumably no history of Hirschsprungs in the family, mm-hmm. or anything like that. And then suddenly you're thrust into this world of washouts or irrigations. And you've got to learn all of this terminology within hours, not days or weeks, that usually it would take people days and weeks to learn that. You have to learn it within hours. And I have so much respect for anybody who has to learn everything so quickly. At that point, as soon as the word Hirschsprungs has come up, sometimes people are told not to Google the word Hirschsprungs because they don't want to scare them. Did you Google straight away or did you sort of leave it?
Straight away. I couldn't. I needed to know what I was about to get myself into. I needed to know what was going on. And they always say, don't Google, don't look it up. But I'm not that person. I'd rather know and be scared than be scared of the unknown. I have to know, like, let me know. And I feel like the more you go and research yourself, when the doctor does come in, you got questions to throw back. Now I'm asking you questions. Now I'm telling you stuff. Now I'm saying stuff that you probably didn't even think I know, but I'm going to research you every time. I don't care what it is.
Yeah. No, I think people are always one side or the other. Either they want to know everything or nothing. I don't think I've met any people who are in the middle with that.
I need
usually
to know.
Usually it's the side of wanting to know absolutely everything. Touch on something you said earlier. You mentioned something about probes. I don't think I've come across that before. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Oh, well, is this awkward? Like, can I grab one and show you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, let me grab it and show you. Oh, sorry. Hold on. Oh, the bag looks. They're clean, by the way. So the probes look like. Hold on. The probes look like this. But they literally look like. Not to be, you know, but you literally put the. They go up in numbers. This is the smallest, the 3.
Okay.
And the biggest is 13. So basically, you're like putting it in because the surgery is done through the anus part.
Yeah.
They pull the, yeah. So you're putting it in there so that surgery phrase doesn't close or get too tight and then nothing can come out of it because it's, you have to do this to keep it open so it like stretch and stays there. So it was just going up in numbers. I think we started at a, We originally started at, after the surgery, we started at an 8. So this is an 8. So yeah, you have to do that. And you just have to go up. You do like 4 times a day. 4 times a day. And then after a certain amount of days, you go up a number. So you had to finish at a 13. Yeah.
Unlucky 13. I don't think I've. I'm sure it's something that other people must have obviously done before who have had on, but I don't. I don't think I've ever. Anybody's ever spoken about that before.
Yeah, they call them dilations.
Okay.
Hmm?
Got it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, they call it dilations, but yeah, I call it a probe because it's a probe. But yeah.
With a probe, it was going to be some sort of high-tech electrical thing that was going to...
Oh, no.
How long did you have to do the dilations for?
I think it was like 2.5, almost 3 months every day. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, because that's the other issue, I guess, with Hirschsprung's is it's quite an invasive... condition, so it's quite sort of both the surgery and various procedures, they are quite invasive, so I guess that's a sort of a an issue that I find with Hirschsprung's. There are a lot of procedures that there's only one way of doing them, really. So I guess that, and how did you kind of take the dilations, were they sort of easy to do as you went through, or was it sort of difficult to start, or how was it?
It was easy to do as it went through, but as a baby, you don't really want nobody messing with your foot. It didn't hurt him because, like I said, they gave him the 10 days to recover in a NICU, and then they waited 2 whole weeks after that once he got home, so it wasn't causing him any pain or anything. But he just said, now, if you're doing the dilations, if poop flies out, that means you did it right. So we were making sure the poop flew out.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. And it's one thing you mentioned as well with his surgery was that the doctor or surgeon was fairly sure that not too much of the intestine was affected. Does that mean that he had sort of short segment or very short segment, do you know?
Mm-hmm. He had short segment. So when they did the biopsy the first time, he said he saw it. He said it was close. Even on drawing, he said it was close to like the anus. It was like that part. It was at the end. So it's short segment. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I think that's certainly the most common one. I think there's about 80%, the research I've done, about 80% of people have short segment, like myself, have short segment. Excellent. So one thing I wanted to move on to, which is, I think, where I first came across you and your son's story was on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And there's a few videos that you've done on TikTok, which are fantastic. There's four, five in particular, where you go through explaining the types of Hirschsprungs, the potential treatments of Hirschsprungs. And if anybody hasn't checked that out, please do, because it's really, really good. What made you kind of think, right, I want to do this. I want to sort of maybe educate people on Hirschsprungs.
So before the Hirschsprungs, before the baby, I didn't get to do it with my first, but the second, I was documenting my pregnancy on there. So when you're documenting your pregnancy and then all of a sudden you just stop posting, you literally have people in your comments or in your messages like, hey, where's the baby? You had the baby? And at first I didn't want to share because I'm like, I was sad that whole time he's in NICU. I was not in a good headspace. I was not okay. But you literally have people looking for you. People that you don't even know are checking in. Are you like, have you had the baby? Where's the baby? What did you have? Because this is the pregnancy I did where I didn't find out what I was having until I gave birth. So people want to know, what did you have? You know, and I'm just like, okay, I have to share this, have to let them know. But I think once I shared that, you know, like, he's in the NICU, that's why you haven't seen me, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. My husband, he was like, you stop doing videos. He was like, what if it's somebody out there that's going through what you're going through, but they don't know how to handle it either? And you've been doing all this research. You've been looking stuff up. He was like, you could be posting videos about it and, you know, maybe you're helping somebody else. Maybe your story or your son's story is helping somebody else and you don't even know it. And he was right. But so I posted those videos. And even to this day, I haven't posted a video in a while. Shame on me, I know. But even to this day, I still get messages of people who found my videos and or find them. And they're messaging me like, hey, like, can I message you? Like, what, this is happening. This is what the doctors are saying. I'm not a professional, like I said, but I mean, I can like share my story or tell you like what you could expect or tell you, or just give you like words of encouragement to, you know, like, you're not alone. This is not an easy journey, but I mean, you're going to get through it. It's going to seem confusing. I'm telling them, ask as many questions as you can. No question is a dumb question. If you don't understand, get them to write it out, draw it out. Make them sit there until you understand what's going on. It's your baby. This is your life. Don't just accept what anybody's telling you. And I like the fact that I've talked to so many people. I exchanged numbers with so many people. And like, I didn't met a lot of different people. I literally just talked to a girl last week. She just had her baby. And she had reached out to me because they had concerns of Hirschsprungs, and he did have Hirschsprungs. So you just meet so many different people. I think I only met one person in Houston so far, but everybody else has been like New York, Denver, where else? It was far. I think she was like, where was she at? I think she was in Barbados.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I've talked to a lot of different people and I love it. So, yeah.
But that's brilliant, though. That's, well, kind of, yeah, similar to what this is. It's creating a community and then showing people that they're not alone, you know, like you said. I don't know whether it's just me being in a Hirschsprungs bubble, but I see, you know, so many people who have this condition. And we always hear told, you know, it's 1 in 5,000 or there or thereabouts, and it's so rare and all of this stuff. But actually, I think there's way more than
anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think so. I again, I mean, 1 in 5,000 would still be, you know, several hundred thousand people, if not into the millions, you know, of people across the world who have this condition. And a lot of them obviously have some form of social media, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok, Facebook, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think sort of just sharing a bit of info, it's like you said, you know, we're not doctors. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of info here and there, especially if you're blindsided by the condition, it can really, really help. And that's, you know, I think, and that's where, you know, TikTok, I think, is really good for that kind of thing, because you can do short little videos. Whereas, I mean, you can do them on Instagram, you can do them on Facebook, but TikTok's much better for just short little clips, videos, you know, this is what it is. This is what, you know, this is what might, you know, happen in terms of surgeries and pull-throughs and all of that stuff. I think those brilliant. And I think as well, it's
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Are those, I guess, probably more for parents, would you say, those TikToks?
It's for parents, but I think I've met two people besides you. Two other people that have it themselves that are adults. So that is for parents, but it's for, you know, those that have it and deal with it. So they're being seen as well.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't stop as a baby. Like, you still, and even if you had the surgery, like my son, they call it now fixed Hirschsprung's. It's considered fixed Hirschsprung's, but it's really not fixed. Well, it's a fixed in a surgery aspect, but he's still dealing with daily struggles from the Hirschsprung's, if that makes sense. Because I don't know if it's related, but when I tell you he's allergic to everything.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
everything.
I think diet's a funny one. And you're absolutely right when you say that the word fixed, you know, it just, it isn't, you know, it's, and it's so difficult to say, because everyone wants to know, you know, what's going to happen in the future. But we can't tell everybody, we can't tell anybody, you know, because we don't know. And there are people who have one surgery and then everything's, you know, by and large fine. There are people who've had surgeries into the hundreds that I've spoken to, you know, so everything is so, so different. And it's interesting you talk about diet as well, because I think that's one thing that's being explored a little bit more, certainly in Hirschsprung's children and research wise. But when you say allergic to everything, it's sort of, do you mean sort of like milk and dairy?
So we took him. So I initially, okay, so this, the allergy test started because I let someone babysit him. And when I left snacks that were for, mind you, I didn't even know he had allergies. I left snacks for my oldest son. It was a group for his snacks. And I left a snack for him. I had never gave him peanut before. Well, he wanted some of my oldest son's peanut butter crackers that he liked. So she gave him one. And when I got home, he was just throwing up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is this the Hirschsprung's or is this something else? So, but she was like, I was like, what did he eat? What did you give him? She's like, I gave him peanut butter crackers. I was like, girl, I never even gave him peanut butter before. So the next day after he finished from that, I gave him I put like a little bit of peanut butter on my finger and I gave it. I swell up. Just hive immediately. So I took him to the allergist. He's allergic to shellfish, peanuts, like all nuts, corn, any corn oil, corn, anything, sesame, soy, milk, egg. What else? What else is on their list? I think that's it. Corn, sesame oil, which is that stuff is in everything, like everything. So when it comes to diet, it's hard because he's three. He wants to eat all the fun stuff and he wants to eat this, or he sees this and I'm like, you can't have that. I'm sorry, you can't have that. But I will say he does eat every fruit. Every fruit is his. He does not eat vegetables. I don't know what's going on with that. Don't fight him on it, but okay. He loves chicken nuggets, which you have to read that too, because I bought a new brand of chicken nuggets like a couple of months ago and not thinking anything of it, gave it to him. Instantly, whole body covered in hives. Or go read it. It had egg in the chicken nuggets. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even, like, why would I switch up his chicken nuggets? So, you just got to pay attention.
That is a tough one with Hirschsprungs. And unfortunately, again, with diet, it's difficult, isn't it? To know, well, how much is the Hirschsprungs and how much is just, you know, normal, whatever. But it's a tricky one because a lot of it, unfortunately, is trial and error. And you just until something goes wrong, you just keep going, I guess.
And I want to say that first year after surgery, I was in the emergency room a lot with him because like you said, it's trial and error. I didn't know what was a regular common stomach bug or what was enterocolitis. Like, I didn't know which one was which, and I'm not a person that's going to chance it. I'd rather go to the doctor and you tell me he's fine than me stay at home and he's not fine. So if I got to go to the emergency room every time, baby, I'm going to go every time. So we were there a lot. And sometimes it was a stomach bug. Luckily, thankfully, it has never been anything serious because every time we go, and I don't just go to the closest emergency room. I'm going back to where he had the surgery, back to where that surgeon is every time. Going, I don't care if it's a drive. Don't care. We're going there. And it's probably like a 30-minute drive from us, which isn't too bad. But of course, there's closer hospitals. But I'm gonna go back there. But yeah, we've been now. I can kind of gauge what's what. Like last night, he threw up and it was green, but it's because he had a Fruit Loop. But he also threw up because me unknowingly, I gave him a little piece of a tempura chicken nugget. And it had corn oil. It was made with corn oil. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I had to give him Benadryl because he had the highs again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how could I even think that this wasn't something he would be allergic to? But other than that, I know a lot with Hirschsprungs, you probably deal with the constipation. We haven't really had any constipation. He poops a lot on his own. So that's pretty good. We haven't had to deal with constipation. Hopefully we don't, but if it comes, I'm okay with it. I try to give him a fiber gummy, probiotics, and a multivitamin every day. So those help with that.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've had a chat with several people about probiotics, and that's very highly recommended for children with Hirschsprungs, for obvious reasons. So getting everything moving and fiber and having a high fiber diet and also stuff that you'd expect the Hirschsprungs people to have, I think is one of those. Just going back again to the NICU, because I know you were there, obviously you said you were there all the time, near enough, all the time, as many times as you can. In terms of sort of NICU support and sort of nurse support, was there anything kind of in place for you and sort of to support you whilst you were obviously going through everything with your son?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So originally my husband was supposed to be off for 2 weeks for maternity leave. But once that happened, it's like we had to switch roles. So normally I'm at home with the kids. Now he's at home with the kid and I'm at the hospital because I'm like, I need to be there. And at this time, they normally let kids in the NICU, but they don't let them in during like flu season, stuff like that, cold season. So, and during that support, what support looked like for me, he had really some really good nurses. Like, I still have the notes in my phone. So anytime they did anything, I was writing down the time. What they did, what day it was, who was the nurse on his shift. And if I liked the nurse, she had stars by her name. So I'll make sure to request her again, make sure she's with him. My mom and my sister, as much as I was up there, they were up there. So they would come and sit with me. Or even if they would be like, okay, go home. Like, you need to go home. You need to go to sleep. They would go sit up there when I couldn't, my mom and my sister. When I would come home, because I couldn't, you could be in there overnight, but I'm telling you, I'm in there from the moment I wake up about 7 o'clock in the morning till about 10 o'clock at night, sitting in that chair in the NICU. I would bring a lunch, but I would just be sitting there like, I'm going to sit here. So I would go home at night because I'm like, okay, I still have another baby, so I still have to be there for him too, even though I'm still dealing with this. So I would go home. So to give me comfort, my mom and my sister would go sit up there. To support me in that. Or before I would go to bed every night, I would call, because you can even call and they'll give you an update. How's he doing? If anything happened, what he's doing right now. Oh, he had a bath. Oh, he's sleeping. So that would help me like be able to go to sleep, so I can go to sleep and I can be right back there in the morning. So thankful for my mom and my sister, because when I couldn't be there, they were there. And yeah.
Yeah, I think absolutely having that support system is obviously, you know, so important, especially when you're going through things and you don't necessarily know, you know, what the immediate future holds, you know, kind of going into the unknown. Having that support system is obviously vital. If we move sort of towards now, I know you said your son's three. In terms, three going 30.
I'm going to let you meet him too.
But yes, so in terms of his future, I know you said he's had one surgery already. What sort of both medically and non-medically do you see and hope for him in the future?
So we medically wise, we see the GI doctor every 6 months. Depending on if we had any scares at the hospital, he does stool samples every time just to check his stool samples. And when he's been looking at his stool samples, he hasn't seen anything that's alarming to where he wants to put him on a daily antibiotic, because that could be a thing. Future, I want him to, like, once he's a little older, of course, I want him to understand his allergies, but I also want him to understand his Hirschsprungs. I want him to know what it is, how to manage it, and things like that. Like, we haven't been able to, like, he's ready to potty train. Like, he knows when he has to go to the bathroom. He can tell you he has to poop. But lately, and this might be TMI, but we're talking about poop and intestines or whatever. Lately, it's hard to potty train because he can't trust a fart right now. You get what I'm saying? So it's hard to leave him without a pull-up or a diaper and just let him be in the underwear like he prefers, because he can't trust it. Sometimes, let's see, 100% right now, lately, the last 2 weeks has been kind of crazy. So I'm going to say, like, the last 2 weeks, 80% you can't trust the fart. You can't. So I can't just leave you in the underwear like he prefers. He wants to be in the underwear. He sees his brother. He wants to be in the underwear. He wants to just go to the bathroom by himself. But we can't trust it because we're at home and, you know, you're that's happening, or we're out and you're in regular clothes and we got to, or because they're at the stage where they're older now. I'm not carrying around a diaper bag. So, yeah, so that's where we at right now. And then another thing I do want to mention, because nobody else in my family has Hirschsprung. So I did have a third baby. So when I had her, I was nervous to go have her because they said that it could be possible that the next sibling or next baby that I had Hirschsprung. So that was a scary birth too, because I went in and that was immediately what I'm thinking of. But you're thinking, okay, she could possibly have it, but it could also be possibly way worse than what he had. So I'm literally crying on the table before they even started. I'm crying during things. And then once we got out and they finished wrapping me up for my C-section, my husband, when they rolled me back in the room and he had the baby, he was like, she pooped or whatever. And I just start crying so hard because I'm like, thank you. So, but she ended up not having it either. And I know sometimes siblings might have it. So that's just a little hope for somebody that, you know, probably dealing with that. Maybe they can have it, maybe they won't have it. I mean, you never know, but.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Very, very true. Same in my family. I mean, I'm the second of four. All boys. Okay. So.
And nobody else has it?
Nope. Older brother doesn't. Two younger brothers don't. None of the rest of my family. Nobody. Just me. Okay. Why? No idea.
You're the special one. You're the special one.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself. But it's, yeah, so it can be very random and very difficult to sort of predict. I mean, it is very tricky, but that's a really interesting bit just to share. If people do have Hirschsprung's children and are looking to have more children, it may not necessarily, it's not 100% guarantee that the next child along is going to have Hirschsprung's for sure. But no, thank you ever so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you on. And I just wanted to say also, you've been a fantastic supporter of this podcast. Every TikTok I post, you like
it. I'm going to repost it.
You like everything. So ever since I started TikTok.
Everybody should know.
No, but thank you so, so much for coming on. And obviously all of the stuff that you do with your TikToks and et cetera. If people don't know where to find your TikToks, where can they find them?
They can find them at Beingbria. That's Beingbria.
Fantastic.
That's TikTok and Instagram.
TikTok, brilliant. And I don't, because TikTok's, yeah, TikTok's better for that kind of stuff. Definitely. Mm-hmm. But I very much wish you and your son all the very, very best for everything in the future. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for you and your health and your podcast, everything. Big things for you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprung's Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprung's_Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.